spread the word. On iTunes, you can subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. You can now also find us on Stitcher, Google Play, and TuneIn. Our website is minorconversations.com, and you can catch us on Twitter at minorconvspod. Now, on to the show.
Thanks for joining me, Ben.
Hey, it's good to be here.
You have a job many would want. How did you get here?
I mean, how I got here to this suite in Harrisburg. Well, I know what you meant. You meant, how did I get here to this position? I get asked that a lot, and I need to come up with a short answer for it, really. But I did not seek out this job in the sense that I had this idea that I would write about, you know, the business and culture of minor league baseball. I did not have this idea that I would travel all over the country. Basically, in 2005, which is the first year of MILB.com, I got a job through a friend. The friend was Zach Campbell, who's a, you know, pretty well-known ball hawk, and I met him on Craigslist. But see, we can go on all sorts of tangents. Anyway, I got a job writing, okay, the short version. From here on out, nothing but the short version. I got a job writing game recaps at MILB.com in 2005, and you know, part-time, night shift, hourly. And one thing slowly led to another, where I started writing a promo column, and I found I enjoyed writing about minor league baseball promotions because I enjoyed making jokes and writing more about pop culture instead of just pure sports writing. And that kind of created a niche that I didn't even know anyone needed. But I found that minor league baseball executives were reading what I was writing because for the first time there was like a writer doing real-time analysis of what other teams are doing. And if you work in minor league baseball, you always want to know what other teams are doing. So that kind of accidentally let me know I had a niche to maybe expand upon, and I liked writing about it. And minor league baseball is such a big world. And, you know, did that for a number of years, build up the niche. And I say niche, not niche. Niche. You know, build it up, started the blog in 2007, and that's, you know, affiliated with MILB.com. Got full-time in 2009, and then I kind of made the case that if I'm basically now a full-time writer, I've only been to a few minor league ballparks, I need to kind of go to these places to really be a quote-unquote expert in the field. So my first official road trip started in 2010. Slowly years, I've just kind of developed my routines with visiting different ballparks, and by the end of the season, I'll have visited every single active affiliated minor league ballpark, and there's many I've been to twice, and 13 defunct parks, so 220, 30, 40, 200-something visits in all over 9 seasons now. That was not the short version either. We can go back and just do a lightning round if you want.
No, it's okay.
I hope people aren't bored by me. I'm sorry.
No, they won't be. If anybody, it's they're bored by me.
So okay. Far. All right. Well, you're speaking for the people, not me.
How are your bosses with changing kind of what your original role was and expanding that out at the time back in 06, 07 in terms of letting you kind of do what you wanted to do a little bit more?
Well, I think the way I developed was also a function of the fact that there had never been a website for minor league baseball, MILB.com. So especially when I started and started developing this niche and started Ben's Biz, that was part of a larger function of no one having ever had to do a website of minor league baseball, kind of covering what all these 160 teams are doing, you know, also on the prospect and player side and everything. So, you know, it wasn't like the Wild West. I mean, it's still a corporation, and MILB.com, you know, is run through MLB Advanced Media, and that's who my employer is. So it was more like, okay, you want to do that? Okay, you can do that. And a lot of it was me kind of doing it on my own, especially in the beginning, and saying, this is what I'm doing. I want to keep doing it. So not so much a lot of push and pull, but just a slow progression of me just keep, I just kept pushing further and further. And I was like, okay, I can do this. I can do this. And it's been a long road, man. Jeez.
The tagline for your little... your little section of the internet is exploring America through minor league baseball. What do you find in America as you explore it through minor league baseball?
Well, one of my, not a tagline, but kind of a expanded version of that is, you know, every minor league baseball team is a reflection of the community in which it operates, and therefore these 160 teams taken together is a reflection of America. And I really do love that premise, and I really do love getting to do it. And one thing I push back upon a lot is when, you know, I've tried to go everywhere, and I have gone everywhere, or almost, in the minor league baseball context. And I like going to places that I never would have gone to otherwise. I mean, of course I like Nashville or Las Vegas or one of these AAA cities, but I also like the fact that I spent a night in Clinton, Iowa, and Beloit. Man, I'm forgetting what state Beloit's in because there's two Beloits. All right, Beloit, Wisconsin, but then there's also South Beloit in Illinois. Fun fact. But those sort of places, going to the Appy League, the Pioneer League, rookie level, you know, going to a game in Bristol, Tennessee, another town on the state line. See, minor league baseball is confusing. You know, where there's not even a full-time employee. It's all volunteer-run Appy League team, and it feels almost kind of like American Legion. But anyway, all these places I like to go, and when people say, ooh, Beloit, why would you go there? My answer is always, why would you not go there? You don't have to commit to a life there. You don't have to do anything but see a baseball game. And it's fun to go to some place where you never would have had the context to otherwise go. I realize I'm very fortunate to be able to do it in a professional context, and that if people have a limited budget and time, they might not pick a place like Beloit. All respect to Beloit. But that, to me, is something I always try to encourage, of use minor league baseball as a sort of template to go to places you wouldn't go and to see parts of the country you wouldn't see. And I love doing that.
You mentioned earlier that after this year, you'll have seen every active minor league park. There's four across off the list. Let's see.
The Florida Fire Frogs.
Yep, Augusta. And then at the end of the year, you're in Colorado Springs and Grand Junction.
Yeah, you know, Florida Fire Frogs I haven't been to because they replaced the Brevard County Manatees, who I had visited, but they moved to, I never say it right, Kissimmee,
I believe.
Kissimmee, in the Astros' former spring training complex. They play there, so that's just a ballpark and a team I have yet to see. Augusta is the only new ballpark in minor league baseball for 2018, so I've been to their old park, but I have not been to their new park yet. And Colorado, I wanted to fit both those teams on in a trip I did last year, in which I saw eight of the teams in the Pioneer League, or nine of them. Whatever. I couldn't fit them in a trip last year, but I'm going back to Colorado to finish the job. Colorado Springs, which will be the Colorado Springs Sky Sox last games in AAA before they become a rookie league team. And then to the Grand Junction Rockies, who are in the rookie league, that Colorado Springs will be a part of starting in 2019. Minor league baseball, again, is a confusing world. And, I spend too much time here, and it all becomes second nature. And then I'm talking to people outside of this world, and they're like, dude.
Looking ahead, the minute the 2019 season starts, there's going to be, I think Vegas is one, Amarillo, I believe. There's going to be new ballparks.
And Fayetteville as well.
Okay, yeah, there's going to be new ballparks that are added to your list. Is this going to be a yearly thing where you're going to need to cross it off to kind of stay perfection?
Well, look, you know, we're in baseball, and, you know, one of the biggest cliches is, like, stay in the moment day by day. So, you know, I'm not thinking about 2019. Right? I'm thinking about 2018 and helping my teammates win, and I have one teammate, and that's me. So I'm trying to win this season. And, you know, this job has been so kind of making it up as I go along and kind of building upon it and very expansive that I've never really had a coherent milestone to go after. So the fact that I can complete this season, look at a map of minor league baseball, every team, and say I've been to every single one of those, you're absolutely right. I call it like whack-a-mole, because as soon as you think you've been everywhere in minor league baseball, others will pop up. But I've never ended a season saying I've been to every single place in the landscape. That kind of wraps it up nicely for me. Maybe not wraps it up in the sense that I'll do something else, but it's the first time I've had a real milestone that I can maybe – help me to maybe celebrate what I've done so far. I don't mean to say that in any sort of arrogant way, but I do this. I know so many people, hundreds of people, and I'm well known in the world of minor league baseball, but it's also a very lonely job because it's just me making up a niche and doing it alone and setting the parameters for what I'm doing and how I'm doing it and all the logistics of it. And there's a lot of great freedom in that, but you know, it's kind of a lonely endeavor in a lot of ways. And I know everyone's saying like, oh, like poor this dude, he's living the dream. But you know what? Living the dream is pretty difficult sometimes. And I've been in a lot of places for long periods of time, just trying to figure out how to do this. So I'm rambling again, but I just want to, you know, really celebrate having been everywhere, and been everywhere is the hashtag, you know, Ben, that's me. And, you know, hopefully maybe get a little publicity for it too. I feel like what I do and what I write about has a good audience that I'm grateful for, but I still feel there's just like a larger audience outside the world of sports, just Americana, that would find a lot of interest in what I've done, and I want to find ways to make it maybe a little more coherent and accessible to someone who's not immersed in the world of minor league baseball, such as ourselves.
Right. This year you're also teaming up with Versus Cancer. Can you talk about that association with them and kind of what your relationship is with them?
Well, on a broader scale, every year I try to add you know, new elements to what I do so I don't seem to myself to be stagnant. And I've never had a philanthropic element to what I do. And obviously Versus Cancer is a great organization. Fighting childhood cancer, specifically pediatric brain tumors, and they have, you know, a strong foothold in the world of sports, founded by a former athlete. And the partnership came about, a woman named Rachel Mark, who now works for Versus Cancer, but before that she had worked for the Charlotte Knights and Scranton Wilkes-Barre Rail Riders, and she knew me and the world of minor league baseball, and she proposed that to me, and I said, that's great, like, you know, new element for me to incorporate, do something good. I'd like to think I do quote-unquote good work, and that I try to be positive and give publicity to people and places and things that don't get much coverage, but I haven't actually tried to raise money. So I said, well, that's a new challenge and a great cause and something I want to be a part of, and I appreciate that Rachel knew the world of minor league baseball, so she was able to kind of help set up a context for it that made sense and handle some of the logistics, because I get a little overwhelmed with all the road trip logistics. So I'm doing that right now, pledgeit.org/bensbiz, having people donate for you know, a specific amount of money for every ballpark I visit. You know, that's something with my personality. I'll get out there and dance and do stupid stuff on the field, but you know, it's hard for me to say, like, hey, donate to my cause, donate to my cause. Not that it's just my cause. So I need to, I think, like any new endeavor, I'm still learning, like, how can I approach people and promote this without being annoying or just getting ignored. So it's very much in the early stages. You know, haven't raised too much money thus far.
Are the clubs doing stuff for you, too, when you go there for the day?
Yeah, it's certainly not mandatory, but... You know, the teams I'm visiting are welcome. You know, the invitation is extended to donate in some creative way. And, you know, I started this season in Delmarva last weekend, and Star Wars night, and they donated the proceeds of their launchable. So I'd like to also, you know, and teams are, you know, auctioning, you know, autographed baseballs or jerseys. So I'd like to, you know, as that keeps happening, catalog that as well. And then have a list at the end of the year of, like, all the money that was raised, and also have it be, again, a reflection of the different places I visited and the different things that were contributed to make that positive, you know, a small positive step towards curing childhood cancer.
First of two aspects about your visits that I want to touch on is food. Food is such a vital thing in minor league baseball. You have celiac disease, diagnosed in 2012, I think it is.
2012, yes.
But based on that, you had to get creative for how you incorporated food, and you do that through the Designated Eater, which I think is a fantastic way to kind of bring different voices and different people into the fold.
Yeah, you know, when people ask me about the Designated Eater, I always say I'd like to think I would have thought of that concept even if I had not been diagnosed with celiac disease. Definitely being diagnosed with celiac disease accelerated the process, because you get diagnosed with celiac disease, you have to go gluten-free. Gluten is wheat, rye, barley, and in the ballpark food context, that's anything that's breaded and fried or just on bread is not gluten-free.
Which is pretty much everything.
Right. Well, you saw me. We're recording this in a suite, and you saw me just take a hot dog out of a tray and pour mustard on it and just eat it like a big Slim Jim. Right. That's what I've been reduced to. It's fine. But anyway, food is, you know, if you're writing about the culture of minor league baseball, which I am, food is going to be a big part. You know, often I would have, you know, be photographed eating the food and sort of provide my opinion on it. And I got diagnosed with celiac disease, and I said, man, I got to keep doing this job. I got to keep including the food. And then it just kind of hit me, designated eater. I'll recruit people to consume the ballpark cuisine that my gluten-free diet prohibits. And just like everything else in my job, you know, it's just sort of been a slow process of, you know, seeing the whole concept evolve. And now I'm at the point where it used to be first come, first serve, or I'd have teams recruit people for me. But now I say, here's where I'm going. Send me an email if you want to go. And then I try to pick the best candidates based on an email they send me. And it's not an exact process. And I'm a sensitive soul who feels bad about everyone I can't select. But I've been able to meet so many interesting people around the country who have been my designated eaters, which is something I really enjoy. Both meeting people who are familiar with my stuff or maybe even fans of it. But beyond that, just people who just have lives in all sorts of areas of the country that I'm not living in. And I just get to spend a little bit of time and learn about them.
And that's what I think is so interesting. It's a different voice. It's a different, you know, perspective than what you bring all the time, or you almost do the same thing in your professional seminar, or
the minor league baseball promotional seminar.
Yeah, where you have, you know, multiple people write, you know, little columns on their daily basis. I think that's fantastic, just to kind of give another voice and give another perspective.
Yeah, I've always tried to do this. I mean, you know, I'm Twitter at Ben's Biz and Ben's Biz blog, and people just sometimes call me Ben's Biz instead of Ben Hill. So I'll dance and do goofy stuff. So there is a lot of me in this, but at the core of it, I'd like to think that it's not about me. It's just about me being a kind of curator and assembler of a vast body of work that reflects America, as corny as that sounds. And I really enjoy having gotten to, you know, the designated eaters, job seekers at the winter meetings, and also just people at ballparks who just have never had articles written about them, whether it's someone in a front office, whether it's a player who's not a prospect who just has an interesting story of some kind or another, whether it's, you know, an eccentric fan or group of fans. I really like going to a place and writing a story about someone where the subject isn't just like doing interviews all the time. That subject has, you know, a professionally written story about them that wouldn't have existed if I hadn't come through and done it. And it sounds corny, but sometimes when I feel, you know, stagnant with the job or down about it, I think about those sort of things and think, like, hopefully I brought a lot of joy in my coverage or to people through my coverage and maybe giving them a little bit of a platform and a little, like, small slice of celebrity that they otherwise wouldn't have had, that maybe gave them some recognition that they appreciated.
And then we talked about it earlier, off mic, but one of my favorites is your subversive joke of the day.
It's groundbreaking and subversive.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was merely thinking Lenny Bruce subversive, not groundbreaking as well.
Well, I do both on a nightly basis.
On a nightly basis. At this point, do you feel like you're a prisoner in that, or is this... Are these jokes that you'd be telling whomever you're sitting next to at the ballpark that night for the most part?
Well, I would be telling... I am compulsive with wordplay. Compulsive. To sometimes when I'm having serious conversations with people and I find myself twisting all the words around in my brain and coming up with a joke before some other part of my brain punches that part of my brain. It's like, dude, stop it. So I'm compulsive with words and wordplay, and I really can't stop, and my mind doesn't stop very easily at all. So... the groundbreaking and subversive ballpark joke of the day is an outlet for that to make a joke. But, like, yeah, then you start it, and then you feel like you have to do it. It started on Vine, RIP Vine, and I just kind of said, this is funny, you know, to write a joke, you know, and disseminate it through Vine. For 6 seconds. Yeah. And I still use a Vine camera app, so even though Vine doesn't exist, I still do it in the Vine format, and I enjoy doing that. But, yes... especially a job like this that never had a template, I just create sometimes very arbitrary elements of my coverage that quote-unquote have to get done. And then sometimes I'm like, dude, so much of my job, I have to say to myself, no one is telling you to do this but yourself. So just why don't you stop doing it? And then I'm like, no, I did it once, so I have to do it every time for the rest of my life. It's very stupid.
And I'll get you out of here on this. I'm sure you get asked all the time what your favorite stadium is. I'm not going to do that. But
I do get that asked that all the time.
But from your travels and experience, what do you see the keys to a successful stadium?
Well, you know, you have to differentiate what a successful stadium is versus what a successful front office is, in the sense that a stadium is often what the front office makes it in a lot of ways, and what the fans make it. So what makes a successful stadium is very hard to quantify, because you could say, most people would say if it's new, it's successful, and if it's old, it's not. So it's really a tough thing to quantify. I'd say successful would mean energy. That sounds maybe a little new agey, but it's energy. It's a place that consistently has energy running through it, through an engaged front office and an engaged fan base that imbue it with a sense of the sense that everyone who's there really wants to be there. And that's something I pick up in my travels all the time. You go to a place and it might not be the best stadium. It might be, you know, 45 years old, or, you know, at this point 25, 30 years old, and a completely outmoded design. But if it's run well and the fans still enjoy it, then, like, come out. And no one's too good for something like that. This idea, like, that's a dump, don't go there. Well, you know what? If you go there and say, it's still baseball, it's still a game I love, it's still people trying to entertain me for 3 hours, what else are you going to do?
And your description sounds exactly like the Diamond in Richmond with Parney and them. I mean, that, you know, they've inherited that stadium and they're kind of stuck with it for a couple more years at least. But that front office, you know, does things that other front offices don't do to get people in, and they regularly are in the top two of the Eastern League.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the argument's been made that a team like that hurts themselves essentially with their own success, because then the argument for building a new stadium is like, well, why do you need a new stadium? You're doing so well in right. this one. You know, they do need a new stadium in Richmond. Yeah. It's kind of a dump. But, yeah, you see that a lot. I mean, I'm looking forward to going back to Daytona for that kind of reason, Jackie Robinson Ballpark. You know, that is decades and decades old, that ballpark. But, you know, that front office staff has a lot of creativity, energy, and that's Reading.
Right.
Have done unbelievable things in a 60-year-old ballpark. So those are often some of my favorite environments of older ballparks, and sometimes not even very nice ballparks anymore, but where the spirit still shines through. I like going to new ballparks, but often, you know, it's like they don't really have their own personality.
It's a little antiseptic at times.
Yeah, absolutely. And those really aren't my favorite visits, because I know I'm just going to write a kind of boilerplate story about, like, here's what it looks like, and here's some pictures with descriptions of basic elements. Like, it's fun to visit a new ballpark, but I want to go to a place that has, like, some dents and some dings and some stains, because there's stories in those things. And I sound so precious right now, but it's true. That's really what I like. I like things that are a little bit more beat up, a little worn in, a little dirty, because that's where you find the stories.
Thanks, Ben. I appreciate your time very much.
Hey, I appreciate your time and taking the time to take my time and do this interview.
Thanks.
And that wraps up episode 8 of the Minor Conversations podcast. Thanks to Ben for joining me this week. Check out his travels this year, Ben's Biz Blog on MIL.